Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're back from death's door.
I was down for the count for a day. And neither one of us can remember the last time I was like out, whereas you're out easily every 2 months.
I'm like Morrissey.
You're both always sick all the time.
But I do not sympathize with the far right.
No, of course not. So Jeff wants a lot of sympathy when he's ill, but you're ill so much that I can't quite be the nurse you'd like me to be. Nay. Let us even say the nurse your mother was. Nay, let us even say the nurse your ex-girlfriend was.
All right.
I think Jeff...
Is there anything in the marriage vows about this sickness and health subject?
Yes, there is, but no one told me that when my husband was 50, he would need more caretaking than my father, who is 80. So it's come a little early for me. So now here we are, I'm sick. And it's Friday, and I've been on the sofa the entire day, and you have been doing a mix of work and caring for our son. And I don't feel so bad that it's like horrendous, and I have an appetite. So we're going to get a Deliveroo. And you start going, what would you like to eat, honey?
Because you're ill, and I wanted to provide for you and caretake for you.
And what else do you want to do?
Model good behavior.
Yeah, yeah. So then I start going, no, honey, I've been on the sofa all day. You're the one who suffered today. Really, honey?
No, but you're ill.
No.
I don't mind doing that, because that is what you do for somebody who is ill without complaining or berating them for having an inferior immune system.
I don't berate.
You do berate. Here's what it was. You wanted Chinese food. In my heart of hearts, I wanted Indian food. Now, I originally suggested ordering your dinner from one place and mine from another. And you said, no, don't do that. I want to have a shared experience.
And I was doing that to try to be nice to you, because a shared culinary experience is very meaningful to you.
But I wanted you to have the thing that you like, because you've been very poorly.
And I wanted you to have the shared Indian experience that you deserved because of how much you were shouldering. We ask you, who has it worse, the sick person or the person doing everything for the sick person?
Well, let's see what people say about that. And the end of the story is I got Chinese food and it went poorly and I got all pouty and moody.
Classic arc for us.
Now, should we tell them about our guests on this episode?
I feel like we almost became friends through the interview.
Yes. And do you know what I always like? I like a person who you can take one look at them and know what type of music they like.
Well, there's one half of the pair. We knew instantly what kind of music he was into.
Yeah, we think Stu, he likes the British guitar bands of the 1990s. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Maybe he's into the Jam. He had the tracksuit.
Yep.
The sneakers.
He
looked great.
But he was doing a look.
Yes.
Whereas Michelle, our other new friend, we could tell less about her music taste based on her outfit.
And they are the people behind Rockadale Studios, who make the UK version of The Assembly, which we talked about on the podcast last week, which is fantastic. There's only been one episode. It was just a one-off. But as you will hear in the conversation, there's inevitably going to be more. It is a group, 35, I think, of neurodivergent, autistic and learning disabled people interviewing Michael Sheen. And it's just a brilliant talk show format. And our guests later are the people behind the UK adaptation of that format. It's French originally.
Ooh la la.
From Rockadale Studios, Michelle Singer and Stuart Richards.
So my quick watch this week, I binged 7 episodes in 1 day. I watched all of Baby Reindeer on Netflix, which is a show by Scottish comedian Richard Gadd. It was a 2019 Edinburgh show that then had some kind of West End run that won him an Olivier, and now he's got a Netflix show.
Hang on a minute. You're saying comedian. Is this Nepo friendly? Do you know him?
No, I don't think I know Richard. I shared a taxi with him. We gigged together once, and I remember running into him in Edinburgh, but we're not friends. I don't dislike him, but we're not friends.
Well, tell us what this is then.
Okay, so in 2016, Richard won the main award at Edinburgh with a show, Monkey See, Monkey Do, which was about him being sexually abused. He comes back in 2019 and he does the show Baby Reindeer, which is about being stalked.
Uh-huh.
But part of what it addresses is the way that the sexual abuse figures in to the stalking.
So we're not strapping him for a fun ride then?
No, you can't describe it as fun, but it wasn't eat your greens. It was, I cannot stop watching this show, because the way that he makes it feel like a mystery, it feels like we have 2 victims, Richard, who is being stalked, but also the woman who's stalking him.
So are the 2 main characters him and the stalker?
Yes. The stalker is played by Jessica Gunning, who is going to win an award for it. She is unbelievable in this part. And Richard is a very good actor himself. And can I give him credit for something? I don't know how many British stand-up comics we have listening to this, but we have some. And none of them are asking my opinion when I'm hanging out with them. So I'm going to give them my opinion unsolicited on my own podcast, which is a very fetching thing to do. I urge you, British comedians, stop casting your friends in your television shows.
So that's not what he's done.
That is not what Richard does.
And it's a better show for it.
It brings me to a little bugbear that I have. I think it's really sweet to cast your friends. I wish one of my friends would cast me in something. But it is to the detriment of a lot of shows that I watch. And Richard Gadd, I don't know who his friends are, but they're not in his show. This Jessica Gunning is turning it out.
And do you, here comes a leading question, have any particular axe to grind about the casting of this show?
Oh, yes, actually, I do have an axe to grind. This is the first show I have ever watched that I myself auditioned for. And let me tell you something, I am doubling down on never auditioning for anything ever again in my entire fucking life.
So did you see the part that you auditioned for?
Yes. So the part that I auditioned for was Richard plays a comic in this show. So there's a scene where he is going on stage and there's a compere. Laura Smith got the part. I'm a big fan of Laura Smith, very happy for her to have it. Can I tell my audition journey?
Sure.
I have done one audition where I was like, I fucking nailed this. My experience in the room was like the people were collapsing at the table because I was being so funny. Long and short of it is, I eventually found out that through this entire process, the part had already been cast by a model.
You look like a model.
Thank you, darling.
You could be in a Dove commercial.
I could be. So I went, I'm never doing this again. I auditioned for this one because I was like, I don't know. Why would they give it to an American? Why would you have an American comparing a British comedy night? It was so stupid that I auditioned for this part and I knew it at the time.
Maybe you would have been cast if you hadn't taken that taxi journey with Richard Gadd and then he was worried about it being Nepo friendly.
Yeah. God, if I'm one of Richard's friends, I feel really, really sorry for his social life. So I cannot recommend this show highly enough. It comes with myriad trigger warnings. The sexual assault is addressed in very graphic detail, but he is an auteur, and it is a spectacular piece of television.
This week, I watched Meet the Roman Emperor with Mary Beard. Now, before I begin, I do know that Mary Beard was at the center of some social media controversy a few years ago, but I don't know enough about it to have an opinion, and I would recommend that as an approach on many different issues. Uh-huh. I think she's a very British TV personality, in as much as she looks like a real person, which I'd never thought about until I married you. You were constantly surprised that the people on British TV don't look like models.
You have television stars that in America you would only see on like a shitty 11 a.m. game show.
As a contestant?
As a contestant.
Like Adrian Childs.
Right. I don't want to start naming people. It feels too mean.
No, but I think Adrian Childs is great.
I don't think Adrian Childs is unattractive. It's just he wouldn't be a television personality.
It's face fascism.
Yeah.
Do you think the line goes directly through the middle of Ant and Dec?
Oh, wait a second. Dec is on the right side and Ant is on the wrong side.
Yes.
Yes. I think Dec looks more of the American fashion. But if someone was like, Sarah, you're going to have to do an evening with one, Ant seems much more sexy, I think. But Dec has the more American style face.
So I think part of the reason I started watching the show is, do you remember there was a thing out of nowhere last year where everyone was saying men can't stop thinking about the Roman Empire? Were you aware of this?
No.
It started off with an influencer asking their followers to ask their male friends how often they think about the Roman Empire. And all these men were saying several times a week.
What? Do these men fall into one kind of category?
Well, I don't know, but I instantly felt emasculated because I'm almost never thinking about the Roman Empire. I mean, I bear it no ill will.
Oh.
And I know a few emperors. I know the dirty one, the Jesus one, the Et tu Brute one, the psychopath one. But my knowledge doesn't go very deep.
I don't know who the dirty one is.
Caligula.
What did he do?
What didn't he do?
Oh, really?
You'll notice I'm evading the question because they didn't cover that extensively in the documentary.
Okay.
Our son has loved Nero since about the age of 5. I don't know where he heard the name, but for Christmas that year, he asked for an action figure of Emperor Nero. One time he was talking about what our roots are. And I said, I think, look at me, red hair, freckles, Celtic. And he started crying because the Celts were the enemies of the Romans.
Wow. Fucking nerd.
My first thoughts on this show were that it is good, but despite my shallow knowledge, it was just a little bit too broad, both in that the period of the emperors covers hundreds of years and it's an hour long, but also in the way that they would try and make it relevant. So they talk about Julius Caesar's residence being clad in gold, and then she'd say, a bit like Donald Trump.
Oh, I hate that shit.
Or Marcus Aurelius caught up on correspondence whilst watching races, which is a bit like a member of the royal family looking at their phone during the cup final.
So bad. I mean, I've never thought about that, but you're right. That sort of need to be like, and how much do things change really is so uncomfortable.
I also just hate the way that TV thinks that we won't stay engaged unless we hear a modern reference.
That might be true about me, but don't cater to me.
I'll tell you what I really struggle with. When somebody stands in some ruins and says, just imagine what this was like.
Oh, God, that's so bad.
I can't imagine. I will go to sites of great historical interest and I will stand there and I will try and imagine, but I cannot feel connected to what life must have been like. Like your mum will go to some Aztec city and stand there and imagine what life is like.
I don't. Do you know that she's imagining what life is like? I bet I know why she likes ruins. Free. I would rather go, I'm in this city now, in this year, and here's where the locals are getting a great lunch.
Let me tell you a great fact.
Go on.
Up until I think the mid-70s, you used to be able to go to Stonehenge and rent a chisel and chisel a bit off.
What? That is the craziest shit I've ever heard.
I know. So my general thought on this show is once it's lured in the viewer by mentioning air fryers and TikTok or whatever it does turn into a much better program. And you see a lot of great artifacts and hear a lot of very good stories. But I wish it was a series and not a single hour. As ever, we'd love to hear from you. Find the time to send us an email. Carve out a little space in your week.
It makes me so happy to hear your emails. Hear them. Not see them. I hear them with my body. I hear your emails.
Have you watched Baby Reindeer? Has it given you an appetite for a stalker drama? What are other good stalker dramas? Also, do you know what I like about it?
Mm.
It doesn't do what it says on the tin.
Tell me more.
Well, you don't know what it's going to be from the title Baby Reindeer.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
What are the best examples of that? Because these days, the way TV is, often they want you to know exactly what it is, so you're more likely to click on it. And I really like a show that goes in the opposite direction. So any examples of that? Unlikely TV stars?
Uh-huh.
Also, what are your pet hates in the stop treating us like we're idiots category? You know, like the need to mention modern things in historical documentaries to keep us engaged. I'd also like to know about old documentaries that have aged well. So there's no doubt that something like Kenneth Clark's Civilization or World at War are some of the finest examples of documentaries ever made. But do they feel a bit slow if you go back to them in the 2020s? Plus, your recommendations, please. What have you been watching? We need to know. And we need to know if we got something wrong, or we really want to feel validated if we got something right. The email address is
fuckoff@firecrotchandnormcore.com. I'm heavy of heart.
Why?
Well, I'm just going to be honest. We didn't tick over.
Oh, this is the Patreon totalizer. You wanted to see some zeros lined up, didn't you?
Can I just say to everyone, if you think it's exhausting to listen to me pitch the pate, imagine what it feels like coming up with ways to pitch the pate. I have it harder talking to you than you have it listening to me. And last week I thought, this is going to get them. Ticking over is going to get people.
Didn't happen.
No one. No, it wasn't no one. We had a few, but not, you know. We didn't tick over. Do you want to hear how good my fake crying is? We didn't tick over. And I really thought we were going to tick over. It's too exhausting to do and listen to. We didn't tick over, you guys. So come on. So you didn't like ticking over? So what do you want? What do you want from me? Other things? I went yesterday to the guy who put the hedges in, who sold me the hedge jumpers. And he said to me, Sarah, if you are serious about this hedge exploding over this spring and summer, here's what we're doing. I have to be fertilizing my hedge every other day. It is expensive. I'm going to go through a lot of bottles. Also, I'm buying some new moisturizers for my body because my legs have been flaky, and flaky legs remind me of my dad's legs. I can't have my daddy's legs. I have to have nice, supple legs. I want you guys to buy me manicures. I want supple legs. I need fertilizer for my front hedge. Please, please. We'll work so hard. Please join the Patreon. We're working so hard.
And it's my birthday on Saturday.
It's Jeff's birthday. We're getting deep into birthday time. Our son has a birthday, probably at the time of listening. Jeff is on Saturday. We've got a big day planned for you, darling. I'm spending a lot of money on this asshole, okay? Because his love language is gifts and birthday. So I have to greet his love language by spending money. If you want to help, join our Patreon.
Patreon.com/theyliketowatch. Thank you in advance. And our guests later, we already said that we love them. You're going to love them too. They've made a fantastic show. I'm convinced that is going to be huge if it goes to series.
It will go to series. And wait till you hear them, because you're going to go, they are a charismatic duo.
You're going to think, I want good things for them.
And you're going to want to be their friends, and you're going to be jealous that maybe we'll get to be friends with them because we spoke to them.
From Rockadale Studios, the people behind the UK adaptation of The Assembly, it's Michelle Singer and Stuart Richards later. This week, we watched Ripley, which people have been going on and on and on about. But I'm embarrassed to say I was a little put off at first because it's in black and white. You don't hate black and white. You know, we're not idiots. Like, some of my favourite films are in black and white.
You love Casablanca.
Billy Liar. Lots of Ingmar Bergman films.
You're better than I am.
Here's the thing, though. I think if you're using black and white today, you are either making an artistic choice, and it is often an annoying one. Or the other reason people use it is sometimes as a shortcut to evoking an era. Which I think is so stupid, because that era wasn't black and white. It's just that the technology used to record it was. So you don't have a show set in medieval times and then weave it into a tapestry and show that.
Right.
But with Ripley, there might be a touch of that, but I think it's largely an artistic one and it's a good one.
So we've been putting this off, but this is the week where we've given over.
Yeah, and I'm glad that we did. Now, out the gates, I've never seen the film The Talented Mr. Ripley.
I have, but I remember nothing.
And I didn't even know what it was about. I assumed all those early Matt Damon and Ben Affleck films are set in New England. I just think they're all Goodwill Hunting.
Is that what you thought Talented Mr. Ripley was basically Goodwill Hunting?
That I thought it's like somebody who's going to be talented at doing science equations at Harvard or something.
In New England.
Yes. And the reason I'm talking about the film is I saw one review which said that Matt Damon was such a definitive Ripley, the reviewer found it hard to get past it.
Really?
Yes.
That's crazy. My takeaway was so different. We all thought the film was good, but TV, and I think even film standards to some extent, have come on so much in the, 20 years or something since it was out, that this is like, there's no conversation. This is just a million times better than that film ever was.
So for anyone like me who never saw the film and has never read the books, Ripley is a fraudster.
Yes, but a likable, let's call him likable and scrappy.
Well, likable is interesting because I feel that he's a very enigmatic character in this.
I know, but I really like him.
There is so much silence.
I'm not saying I want to be around him, but I'm like really rooting for Ripley.
All right. So this brooding character, Ripley, is contacted by a rich man and he's got a job for him. He's going to pay all his expenses and then some on top to go to Italy and to persuade his prodigal son to come back to the family fold.
Mm-hmm.
And the son's character is called Dickie Greenleaf. And he is played by Johnny Flynn, who we recently saw at the theatre in The Motive and the Cue.
That's who he is!
Yes, that's who he is.
He's very, very talented, this guy.
And again, two actors from this side of the pond playing mm-hmm. American characters.
Yes, what's going on?
How are the accents?
Really good.
Now, would you relish a job like this, being sent off to a far-flung land to retrieve a prodigal son? Because, you know, you'll basically do almost anything for money.
I would love to see if I could be that persuasive, I think. But it would have to be for a very finite amount of time. And I would have to divide it up into hours so that I was like, I'm doing my persuading from 1 to 3 each day. So that I would stay far away mm-hmm. from the guy I was trying to persuade.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I could spend the rest of the time just on my own, enjoying vistas, having some nice, an Amaro maybe somewhere.
Oh, here's the thing I was thinking about. So you see this beautiful part of Italy. And it is a point where it is somewhat unspoilt by tourism. Uh-huh. Because flying within Europe, I think, was still out of the reach of most people in the early 60s.
Uh-huh.
So it's a lot less developed than it is now. And I think I want somewhere just a little bit spoiled.
Oh, you want it spoiled?
Not too spoiled, but I want more options than just the 1 or 2 rustic neighborhood restaurants.
Yeah, and you want them to speak English.
Oh, I don't care about that.
You really don't care if no one is speaking English?
No, if I go to France or Italy or somewhere, I will struggle through rather than expect them to speak English.
Oh, well, aren't you a conquering hero again?
An interesting thing about Andrew Scott's performance is what he doesn't do is make this a character who has a charisma switch. He's quite a weird, borderline uncomfortable personality a lot of the time. Which is slightly at odds with the whole confidence trickster thing. And yet somehow it works.
Well, yes. And what's so interesting is the way that we sort of see that most people read him for what he is, but not Dickie.
To blend in on the Amalfi Coast, he goes and buys himself a pair of Speedos. I have to say, this was a moment where I didn't think it was at its most authentic. So he goes into a shop, he tries on Speedos, and then he comes out and parades them in front of a mirror for the assistant to give her opinion. Who would do that?
I've had a version of that happen in bra shops. They don't really make you parade, but the women want to come in and they want to see you in your bra.
Oh, but isn't this like a whole world of the women who work in bra shops who are able to evaluate breast sizes by magic?
Just this interesting thing. I'm a small-chested woman and I enjoy talking about that, but I have so much like flesh meat on right here under my armpits, that if I scoop the fat from my underarms into my bra cups, I actually have much bigger tits and my rib cage is so big. So I have to find cups that account for tit meat and underarm meat and a huge rib cage. It's really hard for me to find a good bra.
But they do that, these women these mythical women in the bra
shop. This one mythical lady helped me.
But I've not heard of that. With Speedos.
When guys buy bathing suits, do you have that little thing in the crotch so that your dick and balls doesn't actually touch the fabric?
I don't think I've ever tried on swimming trunks in my life. I did have to buy some Speedos a couple of years ago.
I don't want you to act like this is something that happened to you. This is something that happened to me. We went to France and it was in the run-up to our departure. And you were like, I have to go buy Speedos. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? And you said there's some kind of rule in certain French pools where men can only be in Speedos.
Yes, we were staying on a campsite. And I think in all municipal pools and these campsite pools, this is a rule they have en France.
And I think your body is so much more beautiful than you think it is. And I think your body is beautiful.
That's a low bar, though.
I cannot be side by side with a man in a Speedo. But I don't understand, what is your dick able to do in like regular bathing shorts that it can't do in a Speedo.
Yes, I'd like to see the scientific evidence.
Come on, France, get it together. Let my husband wear the shorts he was born for.
We should mention the third wheel, if you like, the other main character. It's Marge, Dickie Greenleaf's girlfriend, played by Dakota Fanning.
So she's playing the part that Gwenny had in the film.
That's the second time we've named an actor with a verb for a surname on this episode.
Fanning and...
Gunning earlier.
Oh my God, what a week we're having.
I think she's really good in this, Dakota Fanning. Although, may I raise one little issue?
Oh, yeah, go on.
Period piece.
Uh-huh.
Modern face.
Oh, you think Dakota Fanning has a modern face?
Yeah, I think Andrew Scott, not a modern face.
Uh-huh.
Johnny Flynn, right on the cusp.
Uh-huh.
Dakota Fanning, modern face. How can there be such a thing as modern face?
I know, it's so weird. What do you think we have?
I've,
you might have old face.
But like 1,000 years old or something. I could be in Game of Thrones.
I'm just now, baby. I'm not like future baby with those eyes, those wide eyes. I'm just now, today, yesterday, and tomorrow.
While we're on modern versus old, I don't think I have ever seen a chair from before, I don't know, the 70s that looks comfortable.
Amen, man.
Now, maybe some of that Danish post-war furniture, uh-huh. But I never see a chair in a period piece that I would want to slump on. Because chaise longues don't even look comfortable.
No, chaise longue looks terrible.
And that was the height of slumping back then.
My dad watches television in a straight back chair.
Yes, it looks like the sort of chair that you'd see in... Was it Abraham Lincoln who was brought up in a cabin?
Yeah, I think it was.
It's got that kind of look to it.
Do you know what Whistler's mother? It's a very famous painting. And she's like this.
Very upright.
And my dad is so upright.
I think we've had much digression here.
Mm.
But the thing we want you to know is...
It's incredible. Oh my God, Jeff is going out of town for work this week. I am over the moon. So I'm going to stay home, and I know that what I'll do is binge watch the second half of Ripley, because that's how good it is.
Have you watched Ripley? What did you think? We have had a considerable amount of email recommending it to us. Does somebody want to do a hot take? To the contrary?
Oh, yeah. Does someone have a hot take? Can this be a point in the podcast where I tell people that I have Andrew Scott's phone number?
Oh, you went out for dinner with him, didn't you?
So my friend Rafe has come up on this podcast before. Like, he only knows famous people. And so he's friends with Andrew Scott. So I went to Rafe's birthday party, and I didn't know anyone, and I was, like, trying to mix and mingle. And so I was just, like, talking to some guy.
Can you give us a year?
It would have been 2012. It was, you know, not long after I moved here. So we were in Rafe's kitchen, and the guy was Andrew Scott. And Andrew Scott and I leave it like, we should hang out. There was straight up like a we should hang out. So we did wind up hanging out. We went out to dinner with his then boyfriend and Rafe. And I remember feeling like, these could be my friends. This is just me now. Because I needed to actively make friends because I had none.
You're thinking that this is my London crew.
Yeah, this could be my crew. These guys would be good enough for me. I thought that. I could remember being like, these would work for me. These guys would work for me. And then somewhat quickly, that Moriarty thing when he was like, I can never say that word, but when he was the bad guy in Sherlock, and I was like, oh, I've got a famous person on my hands. And then Rafe and I went to see him in a play, and then we like couldn't say something to him afterwards because there were so many like Sherlock addicts wanting to, and then I was like, that's a famous person. Now, I thought I had texted him at one point to be like, this is too embarrassing.
No, please be vulnerable with us.
To be like, should we hang out?
So you met him in 2012. Pre-fame, which year did the text message get sent?
Well, I never sent it because I was like, should I try and get Andrew Scott on our podcast? And then I was like, I think I got that. I swear to God, I think that guy and I exchanged numbers. So sure enough, in my phone is Andrew Scott and a British number, but there's never been a text exchanged. So I never texted him.
Send someone now.
Nope.
Say, hey, it's me, Sarah. From the kitchen at that party in
2012. We stood near Rafe's sink. No, I would never. It had to be like to save my child's life or something.
That would be an odd chain of events that led to that being the ultimatum.
Right. I know.
But why don't we throw it out to the listener and say,
okay, guys.
If you know Andrew Scott, why don't you say to him, hey, Sarah was talking about you the other day. And he'll say, which Sarah? You say, Sarah Baron. And then there'll be a very long pause. And then you have all the information at hand to do the spade work to persuade Andrew Scott to come onto the podcast.
Oh, I'd rather die.
Our email address is
fuckoff@firecrotchandnormcore.com.
And coming up next, it is the people behind the British version of The Assembly from Rockerdale Studios, Michelle Singer and Stu Richards.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You guys have a hit on your hands.
Do you think?
Yeah. You're both really lovely people. So you're going to have to act very polite, but you have a straight up hit on your hands. Have you noticed in the past couple of weeks, has it affected the response time when you email people? Are people responding to you faster now that you're hit makers? It's
even more than that, important people have been emailing us before we've even emailed them. So it's even in the last few days, we just had emails from, you know, commissioners and very senior people, they're just coming at us going, I just wanted to say it's lovely. And it's mad. These are people who you're usually on your hands and knees begging for just a quick meeting, just 10 minutes, just Vine, maybe 8-7 minutes. I don't know. Give us 20 seconds. Shall we do a WhatsApp? I'll do you a Vine. And now they're giving us a censor.
What I loved about this show is it is important, which we'll come on to as a piece of television, but also it just really works as a chat show. If you want, what you want from a chat show is not to hear the same anecdotes trotted out and get to know the guest in an authentic way. Just on those terms, it is one of the best talk show formats in years.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I've got a small obsession with, my mum hates this, but if I could have a hall pass with regard to Paul McCartney, still, I absolutely would. Oh. And so we could talk about that later. But if you've got someone like Paul McCartney in that room, the question would be there, quite literally question, what on earth are we going to ask him that he hasn't been asked 1,000 times before? And I think you're 100% right in that you've got elements of just true mundanity being asked of, and you've got deeply profound stuff being asked of the celebrity. And
so the variety question is, what's your favourite motorway? Which was your favourite of your ex-partners? And so on. And the types of questions that we'd absolutely ask on our show.
So have you both, are you both Francophiles? What is the story with you in this?
Basically, our American agent heard about this format. We're just a disability-led organisation. And we look for content that essentially works with disabled people to make proper mischievous shit. Like, that's sort of our whole vibe as a company. And he heard about this show and he told us the chat show where a bunch of neurodivergent, autistic people interview a celebrity. And my first thought was, that sounds amazing. And my second thought was, oh God, I don't trust telly people to get that right.
Right, yeah.
This is going to be shit, yes. Boring, worthy, and all the rest of it. Anyway, they sent us the episode. I watched it and it blew my tiny mind. I was like, this is like no show that I've ever seen before. And so from there, we just figured out, right, how can we get our grubby little hands on this show, which we promptly did. The fact that it was French probably has very little to do with it, other than the fact that the whole thing's got a real French vibe to it, hasn't it? Yeah, a real French don't give a fuck, man.
Yes.
Like, just like the aesthetic, the everything about it, the... There's some questions. Why are they in that space? What, I mean, what's the idea there? And I think there is probably some slightly intellectual responses to that. But largely, it's just because fucking French people. Because we had a lot of meetings with them, of course, to, you know, to find out how they made it and stuff like that. And they would say things like, oh, you know, this show is not like any other show. Normally, as you say, you have an host. We don't have a fucking host. Normally, as you say, you have lights. We don't have no fucking lights. Normally, and the list goes on. But I think if there is a connection to Frenchness, it's the idea of Frenchness
rather than
the fact that we happen to.
And I thought, oh, all these choices you're making with the lights and things, that must be about sensory issues.
That is true as well.
And but also there is that kind of French shrug.
I think it's both of those things. One of the things we often talk about is when you're sort of making access provisions on any show, what you often find or sometimes find is that an access request for one person actually suits everyone.
Right.
You know, or has some other desirable effect. And I think in this show, the lighting is a real example of that, where actually this lack of studio lighting and stuff gives it this really unique vibe. And actually what starts with sort of an access request actually is a brilliant aesthetic and contributes to it feeling hopefully quite new.
How slavishly did you follow the French format?
It was really clear to us, once we'd seen a couple of different episodes of the French series, that the blueprint was 100% there and we did not want to change it. I don't know if you know this, but in the French version, that collective pre-existed the show.
Uh-huh.
Whereas the key thing for us was then, how do we go about creating this cast of people? Where from? Who are they? What choices do we make, etc.?
So the collective that we see in your show.
Yeah, mostly this cast is from three London-based groups. The first and only time prior to the filming that they had come together as a whole was the previous Friday, when we had a sort of rehearsal. They did not know one another and it really could have gone...
Were you?
I got a question. It was brutal, man.
Tell me more.
Someone asked me what age I was, and I told him I think I just turned 40. Some said you look 50. Some said you look 50.
I think 46 I would go.
I don't think you look 50.
Thank you.
But this person did, and they told you.
That's part of the brilliance of the format, isn't it? Because a non-neurotypical brain doesn't think about social niceties in the same way. They don't make sense.
It's glorious.
So in a way, they're saying what you want to hear. Like, it was one of the great moments of your life when Michael Sheen was asked about the age difference.
Actually, I wanted to bring that up because after we'd watched it and when we knew we were going to get to speak to you, Jeff was like, what were your favorite parts? What was your favorite? You know, he's like, oh, was it the Michael Sheen? When they asked about Michael Sheen's wife, who's so much younger. And despite my core bitchiness as a human, really my favorite part of the show was how lovely they were to each other.
The supportiveness of the group
was one of the most like moving and inspiring things I've seen. You know, I'm often like, what's good about now? Is there anything that's good about now? And I watched your show and I thought, I don't imagine that these kind of groups were around 30 years ago. And my God, like, what a fucking great moment in history that this exists.
But what were the other bits that you were thinking, if, as Jeff asked you, what your highlights or otherwise were?
So I saw a friend of mine last night and we were talking and, you know, the moment, what was his name? He needed a lot of time to ask his question.
Leo.
Leo's taking of his time and the way that Michael Sheen, in a way that seemed so sincere, which I think is really hard to get at with famous people. Like, it wasn't about, I'm a great guy. Let me just give this kid what he needs. Like, the sincerity with which he went, I'm here.
Yeah.
The way the whole room supported him in it.
It was one of the most intense moments of my entire career in the gallery while that was happening. I'm just waiting, fucking come on, Leo. And then he does it. And then for me, I'm going, fucking get in, mate. Yes, yes. Yeah. And it was, for me, that moment was primarily a massive pair of bollocks, because I think had I been on that show and not been able to get my question out and someone had asked me, do you want me to do the question? I'd have probably taken that get out. I'd have probably taken it. And for him not to, it was the bollocks that define that moment more than just, isn't he lovely?
If I felt
it was just that, I probably wouldn't have included it. If I felt if it was only that, and that applies to so many moments in this show, the sweetness, the wholesome stuff can't really exist without the other stuff.
Yeah. Well,
no, it could exist, but it just wouldn't be a show for us. It's just, look at this poor disabled guy. Oh, look at this little autistic boy going on a date. Oh.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Just to follow up on like the editorial judgment thing, I just want to be really clear that Leo moment is as was. And so much of the success of this show, this format, mm-hmm. I feel, and again, referring back to having watched the French one for 3 hours in the room, your experience of watching it there and then needs to be exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And so whilst the challenge is to condense 3 hours into a half hour, you have to leave those moments to breathe as well. It wouldn't have worked if we'd cut all around that Leo section. That would have been insanity.
But that goes against like a lot of instincts as an entertainment producer. You know, dead air is scary, rhythm is important.
Absolutely.
But letting it sit like that was the thing.
Yeah, yeah. One of the real clear observations from going and seeing it being recorded in France was the dead air moments. Mm. Picking up on all of those things in the room makes you feel like you're there, you're experiencing what it feels like to be there. Do you want some gossip?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, felt like.
Look at me.
So,
it's better be about how someone's a piece of shit.
No, it's not. But, okay. Well, I don't know. I don't want to spoil this for you. But the age gap question.
Mm-hmm.
So Stu and I are in the gallery, which is on studio floor. And there are a collection of people, support workers, hair makeup, runners, production team folk, the commissioner's boss, and Michael Sheen's girlfriend, all sitting in a viewing room. And so imagine how it felt for us when that beautiful girl stands up to ask her.
And I like how she phrased it. Like, that was the fucking perfect way to ask that question.
Yeah. I mean, beautifully asked.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Yes. Break in the gallery.
I have to tell you, Stu and I looked at each other as if we were possibly going to die. And then I messaged the commissioner in the viewing room downstairs to say, how did that land? And she told me that Anna, his girlfriend, had laughed out loud straight away, which obviously I would imagine sort of dissipated some tension in that particular room as well.
It must feel good to him, to Michael Sheen, to be like, I know.
Yeah.
So I want to know the day where you went, you know who, what about Michael Sheen? What did you know about him?
The criteria for guests were, there were sort of two buckets, really. One, just very famous.
Yeah.
And two, charismatic, interesting, they would be good on the show.
Okay.
If we'd have gotten the most famous person in the world who might not have been the most charismatic, we might have thought about that. Michael Sheen gave us a bit of both. He's a guy who everyone knew, but also is just great company.
Great.
We thought he's interesting, he's charismatic, he's smart. There's also a little bit of sauce in the backstory as well. And I think all those things contributed to him being one of the sort of first names. Right, he'd be great. Let's see.
And you do want somebody who's prepared to. There's a lot coming at you, as Stu was talking about his experience in that rehearsal. Sometimes the questions are going to be really profound. And it might be about grief. And sometimes the questions are going to be about what you had for breakfast that day and all really silly. You have to be able to, I guess, like register switch maybe.
Can I ask about some of the production choices? So as well as questions, there was, for example, Luca's performance of the Dylan Thomas poem. There was a musical performance. Did they sort of say, this is what we want to put into this 3 hours?
Yeah. The brief had been to the groups, look, in the French format, there are performance elements and we can choose to include as many or as few. Let's work around the basis of there being 2 or 3 per episode. What might they be? But with the caveat that if they are shit, we are not going near them.
They told us that that particular group had recently been singing Here Comes the Sun. Now, our AP on our show did some digging, found Michael Sheen being interviewed on a hospital radio show in which he had said, Here Comes the Sun was the first song that he'd sung to his baby at night. on a hospital radio, and that's why you hire autistic APs.
Because the brains, when they get immersed in something, the hyper-focus, the special interest, that's brilliant.
That detail wasn't in the show, right?
It wasn't.
All we do is we see him get very moved by that song.
Right.
Yeah, we don't need backstory. We don't need to know.
So many people have suggested that in the process of making this show. When we interviewed for producers, and so many people came and interviewed and said, but what I'd love to do is really meet the people behind. That's the kind of show we're reacting against.
Yes.
We're not making a side documentary about what is it like to be. The show isn't even about autism or learning disabilities.
Right.
No, it's about what happens if you give autistic people and people learning disabilities the space. They get the chance to be the ones to ask the questions for a change.
I would just say also in that moment, it's up to Sheen. If Michael Sheen had been wanting to sort of reveal, I think he was so, seemingly at least, he was so moved. He didn't feel the need to sort of elaborate on why this had extra meaning for him. And so, fine. I think it's very generous of him to have made it about those performers.
Mm. I mean, you really fall in love with him across the show. And
I agree.
Else.
And then I hope what you've said is right, that there'll be celebrities absolutely queuing up to participate in this now. And given that, I am petitioning now for Paul McCartney to come on our show.
He'd be great. Three hours is a big ask. I think that's your problem. But
Because I have another. I need to shelve the Paul McCartney thing because I if we're not
because
careful,
I don't care.
This is making me think. Are you talking about doing an election special?
A few people have mentioned it, actually. A few people on Twitter and my sister-in-law suggested the same thing. I don't know if we could. I think we could decide elections with this show. It would put way too much power in my hands.
That's really
I am not a man who ought to have the sort of power that I think we would have. We did talk about various political figures at times for to be on the show.
Would politicians say yes to it?
I'd quite like to see Tony Blair on it.
He's somebody
you'd never see off autopilot.
Totally. And yeah, I bet he could.
Challenge.
I bet he would have it in.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a Tony Blair gauntlet laid down. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So Michelle, Stu, Tony.
Who else? Blair. Wish list.
Yeah, wish list.
Eric Cantona, Michelle Obama, Taylor Swift,
Barbara Streisand, Ryan Reynolds, Paul Rudd would be outstanding.
But I have
a vulnerable. Hit me.
No. What I want from you guys is the people that no other situation can get at. Yes. And to me, that's Michelle Obama.
Right.
She's going too scripted these days. Come on. Oh, yeah. Come back, Michelle.
Come back.
And you guys could get her back.
And Taylor Swift as well for that.
Yeah, Taylor Swift would be amazing.
People who really curate a public persona and know how to work it.
Beyonce. I have a whole, I can talk for a long time, but we're here to talk about you. But no one gets beyond Beyonce. And I think Beyonce. Beyonce is the one who would refuse.
I feel the same way that you've just described Beyonce about the Pope. I think
you want the Pope.
He's a tough booking.
I don't think it's inconceivable. You know, Pope, your Popes, your Dalai Lamas.
Yeah.
You know? I keep wanting to say Nelson Mandela, but...
Wait for the new Dalai Lama.
The Dalai Lama, yeah. Ed Miliband.
Taylor and Michelle.
And Beyonce. That's six.
Beyonce's going to tell you no, because she's the one who doesn't need it.
Oh, then Paul Rudd.
This is our wrap-up question. Michelle first, then Stu. Mm. What are you watching at the moment?
I guess it's a bit boring because it's on all the time, but Gogglebox is my go-to favourite. Maybe it's a bit just because I love telly anyway, irrespective of working in it. I love all of those people. I love hearing people. I mean, this is like absolutely singing to the choir, isn't it, this? Mm-hmm. But people talking about telly is my favourite thing. So Gogglebox.
Stu?
I like quite disgusting things. Mm-hmm. Have you seen a new sitcom called Such Brave Girls?
Yes.
By Kat Sadler. She's a genius. It's magnificent.
We spoke with her. She is a genius.
And then there's a new one called Things I Should Have Done.
Oh, yeah. It's really funny.
With Lucia Kess.
Yeah, Chia.
She's also a genius, fabulous. I think. So they're just two new, brilliant, disgusting sitcoms. And that is very much
my jam. That's your vibe.
Yeah.
Didn't you just love Michelle and Stu? Aren't you rooting for them? Don't you want them to be tasked with bringing the Assembly to series? That's what I want for them and for us.
I just want it for us. And I'm not worried. Can I say that? I think it's so good this isn't even a tempting fate situation.
Because you do worry about tempting fate.
I really believe in that kind of mysticism.
Why do you think fate would be so petty and vindictive?
You're right. It's just, you know, expectation is everything, isn't it?
It's like in a genie story where people are, oh, you've got to be very careful about how you word your wish. Why is a genie so invested in teaching you a lesson about semantics?
You're right. You're right. How many genies are there, I wonder?
None.
To me, an emperor is closer to a genie than a president or prime minister. That's what I want to say to the Japanese. This sounds like a genie, you guys. Come on. Are we taking it to the inbox?
Take it to the inbox.
Take it to the inbox.
I don't think that's going to become a thing. I mean, I don't think anything we do on this podcast is going to become a thing. But I think even in our realm, that's not going to become a thing.
You know how we really let these listeners down?
Go on.
By abandoning Hundi P. Wachi Wachi. I think we really let them down. That was fantastic.
Your voice is funny today. It's got like a husky...
It's because I was sick.
I don't know if people remember the show Captain Caveman.
Do I sound like a caveman?
No, there were three glamorous young ladies. You sound like one of them.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
This first email is from Kat Chappelle, who writes, Hi, FCNNC. Behind on the pods and sadly not a subscriber yet, as I'm on adoption leave. Ooh. I don't know what adoption leave is. Is that she's gotten her baby?
Yeah, it's like maternity leave. I mean, it's the same thing. Congratulations, Kat. That's wonderful.
That's wonderful. Congratulations. I hope it's going okay. I think it should just be called maternity leave. Do you know what I'm saying? I don't think it should be separated in that way. Can I say that?
Yeah, I see where you're coming from.
Okay. You're on adoption leave, so short on time and money. Once I'm back at work, I'll be funding your nails. Thank you. Also, my fertilizer. At whatever point you listen to this episode, I want my fertilizer. That smells like duty balls. So my first doc subject is Aubrey Gordon from the documentary film Your Fat Friend by Jeannie Finley. This is in response to a question we asked about great subjects for documentaries.
Yes.
She, meaning Jeannie, met Aubrey because of a blog post and started filming to see where it would go. Aubrey is such an amazing subject. Funny, whip smart, incredibly charming, and very vulnerable. It's a beautiful study on being in a bigger body and family relationships and difficult conversations. It's a treat of a film. On stuff that's good for my kids, my 7-year-old daughter loves the series I Woke Up a Vampire on Netflix, a drama of an adopted girl who finds out, as you'd imagine, that she is a vampire. Spoiler alert, but there's a moment where the actual Rick Astley appears and also is a vampire. Oh my God. I was looking on television the other night.
You were looking on television.
I was like flipping. I was flipping. And it said Foo Fighters at Reading. So I put them on and it's, you know, kind of fun. And I feel sad about that drummer, whatever. And I mean, I don't cry. Then they bring on Rick Astley to sing with them. I believe that he is maybe the greatest person who has ever lived.
He's having the time of his life is what he's having.
I just think he seems like the greatest person of all time.
Are your feelings about Rick Astley similar to the feelings you had about Huey Lewis when watching that We Are the World documentary?
Yes, yes, yes. They sit in the yeah. same box. I think they're both very attractive. This is back to your thing where you say that I always say that I'm not attracted to older men, but then I constantly list older men that I'm attracted to. All right, Kat, thank you. And congratulations again.
This comes from Rachel Handel, who says, have you seen Wolf Like Me?
Never even heard of it.
Discovered it when reading about Isla Fisher and Sacha Baron Cohen's divorce last week.
I'm so excited about their divorce. I don't even know why. I think I know why. Do you want to know why? Can I say about the...
No, you can't.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, wait. Can I say something else?
It depends.
I think I'm allowed to say it. I had to sign a non-disclosure.
No, that's exactly what you can't say.
No, that's not, you're not letting me.
So let's just move on. It's fantastic. Such brilliant writing. Funny, dark, thrilling. Fisher is really superb in it too. And the chemistry between her and Josh Gad is fab. Highly recommend. Episode's 30 minutes long, so a quick binge watch. It's an Australian show.
Mm-hmm.
You're annoyed at me for not letting you wade us into legally difficult waters.
No, can I just say one thing? Just really fast. I'm going to keep it to 30 seconds. Just really quickly. A thing that I'm not comfortable with is a certain kind of conversion to Judaism. And I read a lot about their marriage and her conversion, and it always made me uncomfortable. And now I think it's interesting that they're divorced. That's all.
And you say this as a Jewish woman.
And I say this as a Jewish woman. Thank you. And I'm out.
This comes from Claire Z, who says, Dear FCNNC, thank you for your excellent discussion about characters needing to bathe. I, too, am distracted by the general filth.
Thank you, Claire.
With this in mind, I watched The Northman with the ever-present crush, Alexander Skarsgård, in it. It is a Viking folklore mythology-ish story. Suffice to say, they are all disgustingly filthy throughout, and the plot was weak and irritating. None of the Alexander itch was scratched. How many times is one supposed to watch the Succession gif of him taking his jumper off?
Here's what I tell you, Claire. What you should do is add in the finale episode where he comes in screaming at Ebba. Ebba! That is also super hot.
Claire continues, I've seen a trailer for a new Apple show with Alexander. His character is some sort of future robot android thing. And the future equals clean. And robots equal extra shiny clean, which I guess is how I like it.
That's fair for you.
Could you be into him if you thought there were wires and circuits inside of him?
So it's 100% Alexander Skarsgård. He just might have a wire inside him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. No problem.
She also says, Sarah, are you obsessed over Sam Bankman-Fried crypto moron and the sentencing last week?
Claire, let's not use such judgmental language on my special boy, okay? Is he a moron or is he a misunderstood genius? I don't know. I don't really care. But I'm over him. I got over him. He's not my Everest or my opioid crisis. He's not my evergreen topic. If you give me another podcast or give me another book, then I might get in. But remember, the news never engages me in quite the way I want it to. So if it's just headlines, I might not be taken with the story.
Thank you to Kat, Rachel, and Claire. If you would like to replenish our inbox, send us an email, please, with your TV thoughts. It is
fuckoff@firecrotchandnormcore.com.
This week, Michelle Singer liked to watch Gogglebox on Channel 4. Stu Richard liked to watch Such Brave Girls and Things You Should Have Done, both on BBC iPlayer. Sarah liked to watch Baby Reindeer on Netflix. I watched Meet the Roman Emperor on BBC Two. And we watch Ripley on Netflix.
Oh, please let the weather be nice. Did you get a little taste? We got a little taste of springtime this week. If you've got new growth in your garden, you need to be watering every day and fertilizing every other day through the front half of April. Are you hearing this? That's advice I'm just giving away for free. Get your hands in the soil. It's good for that mental health. Sweep your front walk. Your neighborhood loves you when they see that civic pride.
Do you have any advice for people who don't have outdoor space?
Oh, yeah. I want you to get some herbs in a south-facing window, some nice terracotta pots. You're going lavender and rosemary because those ones are the prettiest. Mint. You're going to put them in a little window. You're going to tend to them. You're going to give them a little fertilizer, artisanal fertilizer. Okay? Little skosh on top. That's a word that I learned in the film Sisters, which I recommend. And you're going to watch these bloom. Okay? You're going to tend to them. You're going to pick from the top. You're going to shape it. That's going to bring you some joy. Tend to the lamp, tend to your window box, tend to your real box. Care for yourself. Our mental health is helped when we help ourselves.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.